Major Lease, Reel 7.
You were saying that after the smoke signal had been seen indicating the drop zone.
Yes. I was talking about the DZ or the drop zone. And the aeroplane fly over. And in the plane itself, these articles of dust have been put on a parachute. A parachute is attached. And in the cabin of the plane's pilot's cabin, they would indicate when the supplies were to be dropped, and a red light would go on, so this is the time to drop. And then the crew would have maybe a little trolley or a little line to push, and they would push the article out of the airplane, and this was attached to on the cord to the parachute, which used to automatically at that point open and come floating down. This was done about 300 or 400 feet, so it was hoped that if the plane had piloted and got the things right, the things would drop into the dropping of the DZ. That's how the troops were supplied in the jungles.
How big would a DZ have to be? How large an area would be cleared for a drop?
A good 100 yards at least. I said something about that. It was very hard work for them. And they had open bits of jungle, of course, and there were trees there. That was so much the best.
How often would you make a drop to a platoon that was in the jungle?
Depending on how many days they were staying there, the plane used to go out 2 or 3 times from a week.
Yes.
It depends how much the operation, how big an operation was going on.
But
I can recall at one time that they were dropping supplies, something went wrong, and the plane crashed as well, killing all the crew. And of course, that was very nice for the bandits below, because they knew where the plane came down and where. And they got all the supplies as well.
What was
everybody knew. Well, they did find out where the plane had come down, because something had gone wrong. And they had to send troops out into the jungle to find what had happened. And so, they sent troops out and took them a large number of days to find the dropping zone where the plane had crashed. And of course, the bodies were lying there, and they had to bury them on the spot.
Had the plane been shot down, or had it had a fault?
I think so, probably, because sometimes a parachute wouldn't open properly, and it may have got tangled up as it flew over.
Well, I was asking this.
The engine there failed. I never knew. But after that, I can recall said there was a loss of life of pilots, dispatchers, and in due course, the religious fathers were sent over by plane, and he had a service as the Irish final pilot, so consecrated the area of the loss.
How frequently would a platoon need to be resupplied when it was in the jungle, if they were operating in jungle? How many days' supplies could you drop?
2 or 3 days of rations.
Mm. So it'd be about every 3 days they'd need to have a drop.
3 days. It depends, I suppose, not what ammunition was required as well. If there was a big operation and a lot of rounds required.
Was that?
They'd have to drop more citizens.
Was that common that there'd be a lot of ammunition expended?
Well, they would. Oh, yes, if there was a battle or something. Mm. They didn't stand. Once the troops are in the jungle, they wouldn't take one for long. They'd be off into the trees again. I do also recall, there's another interesting point there. We were, I was my family in Singapore, and we went up to, we could go up by train to Kuala Lumpur. I was a driver, and then on to Fraser's Hill. Fraser's Hill was a hill station, and there, houses had been built around over the years, and it was at a nice hill station, where I could stay in flats, etc., and have a very nice time, where I could play golf, nice and cool. So that was very nice. I mean, the governor, I think, used to go up there occasionally. My wife and me had been up there. We drove back, and a few days after we'd been there, maybe a month, the governor had his wife ambushed, and the governor at the time was killed.
Were you conscious that there was a threat when you were there on Fraser's Hill?
Yes, because the bandits were always around, and you didn't quite know. And Fraser's Hill, when I could get up my car, I remember driving my car up there. Mm. My little car. And my wife went up by air. But another amusing point, we had a good Catholic priest there. And he was attached to the priests they held down everywhere. We used to pay them visits. That's nice, interesting. He made us laugh because he'd just taken over from another father. He had his car there, taken over a new car. And he said, you're in charge now. And by the way, I've left a few grenades in the back of the car, just in case you want them. And so off. This good father went in the area at all, driving along on the roads, came round the bend, and he was stopped by a tree in the middle of the road, standing around the tree, two or three bandits. And they said, "Stop, who are you?" "Oh yes, we know you. You're one of the farmers there, aren't you? We know about you and where you come from and what you're doing." So Israel and the faith, a padre, we let you go through. We won't do anything about it. And then he said, "Now, you've got to promise that the visitor you're going to see, you won't tell the Gurkhas. You won't tell the Gurkha command that you were ever stopped. Will you promise that?" He said, "Yes, I will." And so the tree was removed, and on the father went. But luckily, the bandit never looked in the back to see if there were any grenades. And when he got up there, not until some weeks later did he ever dare tell anybody about this escapade. Because if he had, the Gurkhas would have been down there like a dose of salt to stop the bandits out.
Did you ever have any contact with bandits, direct contact?
No, I didn't.
Did you take precautions against?
Well, one was always armed with a spin gun or something, and travelled around. Came up by train.
Were there security precautions at the base areas and the airfield? What sort of measures were taken there.
As far as I could, there was nothing very much going on at the airfields. I suppose they had their priests, etc. There were airfields in those days when they were kept. There was a mark in the jungles because of the troubles.
How did you get on with the Royal Air Force?
There was one officer stationed up there with the Air Force. He was a liaison officer. Who then was a liaison with the platoon commander. So that's how it sort of worked. When, unfortunately, I didn't have very much dealings with myself. I didn't anyhow, because you had the liaison officer who did all the liaison with the RAF. The services in those days, they were very, one department didn't know very much about another department.
Did
they would try and, if I used to go up, by train, all of a sudden they'd try and say, bill me for going up there and flying their airplanes. And one used to have to explain very carefully to the RAF that we were attached to them. They shouldn't bill us for travelling around the place.
Did things with them work smoothly?
Otherwise they worked very smoothly. But there was next to no liaison on our level, next to no liaison. Of course there would have been at the big operational headquarters.
What was it like living in Singapore? Was it a good place to live that time?
Yes. It was a very nice place to live. We were given a civilian house, an army quarter, which had been requisitioned. And more or less, go back on that. Before my wife came out, when the families came out by troop ship sometime later on, two months later, if you'd been accepted and was put on a troop ship, you could then come out there and depending where one was posted, one could get into a guest house, which were quite a large number around the countryside. And I was living in the garrison mess there, and I used to look at the papers, and so I suddenly saw somebody had a bungalow they wanted to let. It was really Edmund Central. I won't say home to Central by some other means than is normal, and I saw advertised a bungalow to let off the main Bacatina Road, which is the main road up into up to Singapore.
You mentioned in your notes that you were present at Singapore during some riots. What were those about? I was asking you about the riots in Singapore.
Yes, no, that's interesting. I, in Singapore, up in Missouri, I commanded this air dispatch company, which was very high-powered, good British troops. And the Malays, the instructors around the place, all Malay troops were being taught driving. And then the trouble started in Singapore. You may remember that after the war, people had to get out of Singapore because of the troubles, and there was a Dutch family there, Mary Hutz or something, and the mother and father had to it out, which they think they did, and they left the Malay sons, they left their little daughter. And of course the whole war, this little girl grew up, and she was a Malay, in all intents and purposes. But the mother and father came back to search for her, and they heard about where she was. And then they wanted to take her, this little girl, back to Holland with them. And of course, the Malay family objected. They said, no, she belongs to us now. Well, then they said, well, we must take this matter to the Singapore courts. And so it went through the courts, and the courts gave the custody of the child back to the parents, and so they could go home. And then the trouble started for everybody then, because this girl had been brought up as a Muslim, and of course the papers got hold of it. And when they were talking about it, the law said, well, she must be looked after by somebody, so they gave the custody of the child into the hands of the local convent. And of course, I suppose the convent, the nuns being what they are, they said, oh, just come in, and pointed up a big statue of the Blessed Virgin. And then the press got over and caught the child looking at the Blessed Virgin, you see. And this was published in the paper. So that thing got uncomfortable. Then the next day, the court decided that it was, they found in their favour, the military government. And the local government, being a bit stupid, they said, and they sent some Gurkhas, not the priest, well, no, I think they were Gurkha troops. They had them behind the law courts just in case of an emergency. And things then got really out of hand. And the courts didn't, and they started to cause troubles outside the law courts. And the Gurkhas weren't allowed to get amongst them because they were standing around there waving their truncheons about, you know, ready to have a go. Of course, they don't let the Gurkhas go. And then the Herald of Singapore went up in smoke. That is the Malay side about these riots. It was known as the Hertzog riots, I think they called themselves. Malays were completely wild, and some of the people came in that Changi, some of the RAF, on the trams, and they're coming down, RAF personnel, and they got over the trams and slaughtered a few of them. And of course, the emergency was declared in the island. Now, our general, forget his name, there was a new general, Dunlop, I think his name was. He was really keen on internal security. And he was really keen to have troops trained in internal security. Because you will understand, and he made us be security minded, that when most of the fighting troops had, were up country dealing with the bandits, and so we had very few fighting troops and subordinates and my company down in Singapore.
Had you done internal security drills?
We had done, and we used to do the internal security drill as has been described to us earlier on. Us knowing something about India and all that, you know, and we did the security drill, marching out in front, looking to the left, looking to the right, the rear guard behind. So, a colonel of the ordnance who was whatever, came rushing up to me. We were sort of put on alert a bit. And I'd gone down into the town, my family, and we heard the riots going back, so we quickly turned around, went back home again. We were sort of at the ready, and then they came and said, we've got to go down and take over in Singapore. So the whole of my company and the others, ordnance and a few more, had formed themselves into companies, and down we went.
How many of you were there altogether, do you think?
We went down to Singapore.
Mm. How many of you were there altogether, do you think?
Well,
what strength?
My company was 120, about 200 troops, and they are there
for nature. Mm. How did you proceed when you got to Singapore?
Really a bit of a laugh that Colonel and Charles had us all in there in the down in Singapore. Now he said, now, Major Sirs or Captain Sirs, which part of the country, which part of the town will you take over? Major Sirs, I have this part. And when it came to me, or when Captain asked me first, I said, very convenient. He said, now, which part, Major, will you take over? And I said, I'll take over the central of Singapore there. Where will your headquarters be? And I said, well, sir, on consideration, I think my headquarters would be the officers' club in the middle. In that time, a lot of the women, really good ladies who were staying there, handed around about, was all clustered behind these walls. I all laughed to this day. There was a big company of troops marching in, and the doors were flung open because they became the soldiers. And they never had it so good. And then we had to go out and take up positions around the town. Went to the Malays running around the place.
Did you have to do any shooting during that process of taking control?
Officially, we didn't. I very clearly remember some wild men in my company were attached to it or something, some little men or other. They were armed with skint guns, and I think they fired on some Malays on bicycles. But other than that, I don't think anything happened. I don't think the general knew anything about that. He wasn't sure these had been hit, I think, or riding their bicycles. And the report afterwards, the whole place thing was bloodless. And there were no casualties.
Mm. How large an area did you have to take over?
Well, the whole of Singapore.
But your company, how big an area did your company have to police?
Well, we took over a number of streets right in the middle. Mm. And we had sections here, there, and everywhere.
Mm.
It wasn't a matter of hours, it was all closed down.
How did you actually control it? Did you put out posts on the street or in buildings, or did you patrol or what?
The buildings, we took over. We were just in the streets.
Mm. Well, did you have static posts or did you have patrols moving about?
Well, we had static posts and patrols move around the place. Mm. I think there was a curfew or something on that nature to stop the Malays getting out. But it wasn't the Chinese causing the trouble. It was the Malays.
Mm.
Because you'd have thought it was the Chinese who were going to cause the trouble, but it wasn't. It was these Malays, because they were mixed on the island.
What were they actually doing when you originally got into the streets? Were they?
Well, there were a lot of people wandering and walking about, and you see that people were rather basically upset. I didn't see them actually rioting.
Mm. Did you encounter any opposition at all?
Absolutely
during
not.
The
just took over.
How long?
The troops got there, that was it.
Mm.
Internal security, bang, wallop. I think we went up and down one or two streets, as I described.
Mm.
And the lay people saw the troops there, and they knew it was really a lot of nonsense. It's only this stir up and this Maria Herzog.
How long was it before you could withdraw then and go back to barracks?
About 3 days, a few months down there. Then it all was quiet. But there was great considerable concern because up in the back, up in Nisou where we were, they had their armory there. And at one time, the people left up in Nisou were a bit concerned in case this trouble would have spread to the Malay troops up there.
Was there any sign that the Malay troops up there were affected?
They were all back for Christmas. It hadn't passed across to them. There were police there, and the Malay troops, and the Malay police. They weren't really closely knitted together, but the troops were rather looked down on the local people. But the funny thing is that they were mainly the police, when the riot started, they had Malay police and they had British officers looking after them. And of course, when things started, the idea on the police point of view that they had a line of peaceful instructions walking down the road, and the British officer in front of them, showing the flags and police, going down to deal with the riots. And the laugh was afterwards that the British officer, police officer, looked round, and when he looked round, there weren't any policemen to be seen at all.
He was on his own.
They'd gone elsewhere. So the police basically were absolutely useless, and they had to call in the Gurkhas and us, because we had Gurkha troops there. Well, that was magnificent as they always were, and us British troops. I suppose about three companies down there.
That was enough, too.
It was just the force there, marching about and walking down the streets, as I've described. And the other words, martial law, had been asked for. The Singapore government had asked the general to take over and declare martial law. So the general at once did that. So martial law was declared and the troops would take action as necessary. There was no question anybody argued about it. And it was the same as we used to do in India. The same thing when the riots were on. Martial law was declared, that was it.
Were there any other incidents, traumatic incidents, while you were in Singapore, Malaya?
No, I think those basically the only interesting things that were other than what I've already described.
I think also you went to Cyprus, didn't you? What were you doing when you were in Cyprus?
Oh yes, well, the RASC was having to shut its, close down, as all things do. They had to give up motorboat companies and transport companies, and so we closed down, and I got closed down too, as one does possibly, and may have to do in this, like you were in the civil service in the army, but once we were in the army, They can't throw you out because you're on contract. You had to either retire, or if you misbehave yourself, you'd be thrown out. But they couldn't just sack you. So then they said, well, it's what the RASC has got to close down considerably. Where would you like to go? You can either go into Rimi. You can, if you want to, you can transfer to the RAF. Or you could extra regimental duties. So I really didn't know what to do. I think, if I changed my uniform, what would I look like in a nice old airfield hall? But stupidly or not, as the case may be, I selected extra regimental duties.